This commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. I'm Wayne Zell. Today's show will include a special guest, but that doesn't start until about 10:15. In the first half of the show, we're going to talk about representations and warranties insurance, something that's important when you're engaging in buying or selling a business. Before we get to that, let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor, Odin Feldman & Pittleman, full-service law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, which includes articles, videos, and audio, including some old radio shows, of interest to you in topics describing tax, estate planning, and business planning issues. And lastly, I invite you to read my column in the Washington Business Journal every month entitled Blueprint for Wealth. As I mentioned, today we're going to talk about representations and warranties insurance. Now, whenever you sell a business, the seller is required by the buyer to give certain representations and warranties regarding the business that he or she or it is selling. Representations regarding the financial condition of the business. Representations and warranties regarding inventories or land that it owns or real estate that it's leasing. About the equipment that it's using in the business. And these representations are important to the buyer so that the buyer is comfortable buying the business. Representations and warranties insurance, or known as the indemnity outside the United States, has been available to insurance buying consumers for at least 15 years. The coverage has undergone many changes over this time, and some of the more recent changes have been fairly dramatic. But historically, people who do deals, mergers and acquisitions, and insurance brokers dismissed rep and warranty coverage as coverage with little practical application and a really high cost. In fact, some people still look at it that way. Insurance buyers have even had less to say, as they've been relatively unaware of its availability, or they've seen that this is the type of insurance that is sort of last resort, and it might help resuscitate an otherwise flawed transaction. Now, much of this perception has been filtered through brokers who seem to shy away from this type of insurance even when they're discussing the topic, mainly because they're not familiar with how it works and the processes used to obtain reps and warranties insurance. In many ways, the development and acceptance of rep and warranty coverage is similar to what has happened in the employment practices liability insurance industry. EPL coverage is now pretty basic and standard and is considered by businesses to be a staple insurance product that you need to buy. But when it first came to the market, it was viewed with a jaundiced eye, mostly due to the lack of familiarity with the product by both buyers and sellers. Now, today, it's understood that employers typically use this type of insurance to protect them against the usual risk of operating. Similarly, rep and warranty coverage has developed to a point that is very similar to EP&L. It's not as universally accepted as employers' practices insurance, but the development of rep and warranty coverage has reached a point of stability so that it's being used more frequently and in certain circumstances. There's stability in pricing and how it's being used and the scope of the coverage that you can get. There is even stability and even growth of participation by the insurance companies in this type of product. Since the first policies appeared in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, the development of the product has been helped along by claims development, which opens the door to new underwriters, people who are willing to underwrite the risks, and a steady marketing effort by insurers who introduce the product to the brokerage community, people who sell the product to the consumer, or to the seller usually is the one buying the type of coverage, particularly those who focus on mergers and acquisitions and diligence in connection with the purchase and sale of a business. While it's still looked at as a tool that was developed for private equity buyers, people who are not strategic buyers, who may not be as familiar with the business as a strategic buyer, the interest and use of rep and warranty insurance has filtered into the larger brokerage community. Now, how does rep and warranty insurance work? What's covered? Well, basically, the primary purpose of a rep and warranty policy is to provide protection to the buyer for unintentional but proven breaches of the seller's reps and warranties in the purchase agreement. It's important to emphasize this point at the onset of discussing rep and warranty insurance coverage, because historically, the coverage was mistakenly interpreted to extend to other areas of the purchase agreement, including covenants like non-compete covenants. In fact, claims that have been put in by policyholders have been denied solely on the basis that the claim was worded as a breach of a covenant and not a rep and a warranty. And what's the difference? A rep is saying, I represent, I warrant that my business is X, Y, or Z, that the financial condition is sound, that the financial statements are true and accurate, etc. A covenant says, I promise not to do something, or I promise to do something in the future. And again, this type of insurance is really built for the reps and warranty coverage and not for covenants. Also, important to note is that rep and warranty insurance policies generally only cover breaches of representations made at the time of the closing of the transaction. In other words, the policy is a snapshot in time. For a claim to be covered, the representation that is going to be covered by the policy has to have been unintentionally breached at the time of the closing of the deal. If post-closing facts or circumstances cause a breach, that's not going to be covered. Also, the breach must be unknown to the seller at the time of closing, which means that any prior knowledge of this breach or potential breach will not be covered. This might include items contained in a disclosure schedule that's usually attached to the merger and acquisition agreement, or known environmental conditions like a leaking underground storage tank, or ongoing tax audits that weren't disclosed in terms of the disclosures that are required to be made to the buyer. Now, a rep and warranty policy serves both the needs of a buyer and a seller. Both sides want the transaction to close, but the underlying issues that each side is looking to address in closing may differ greatly. What does the buyer want? Well, the buyer is looking for time or money or both, meaning that the most frequent use of these types of policies for the buyer is an extension of the indemnification, the promise to protect the buyer from liability that occurred prior to closing or for acts taken prior to closing that is offered by the seller. This extension might be in the form of monetary, in terms of limits above a escrow that is being set aside at the time of closing, or it might be related to the time over which the protection is offered. So in other words, it might go beyond the expiration of the statute of limitations or the period that the indemnification is specifically covering, such as 1 year or 2 years or 3 years in the contract, or some combination of both. The seller, what does the seller want? Well, the seller wants out. The seller wants to sell the business, keep the proceeds, and walk away. Sellers buy rep and warranty insurance policies to exit their investment in the business cleanly and quickly. The strategy is applicable to almost any seller. An entrepreneur who wants to exit his or her business cleanly to ensure his heirs' security or to use disbursement funds to pay off shareholders, enter into another venture, or simply for peace of mind may want this type of insurance. A financial sponsor owner may wish to exit quickly and cleanly to pay off its investors more quickly, protect against the possibility of clawbacks to limited investors, or to help secure the closing of the fund in general. A rep and warranty policy can be purchased by either the buyer or the seller to the benefit of and without any detriment to the other party. The decision is usually made based upon the parties to the transaction and their needs. As I mentioned, oftentimes private equity investors and private equity buyers will look to reps and warranties insurance to help protect them against any potential loss resulting from breaches of the seller's reps and warranties. The buyer may make the decision to purchase coverage for the seller or vice versa. It may be an adjustment to the purchase price overall. When making the decision as to what to buy and whether to buy it, the type of policy purchased matters. There are two policy forms, a buy-side policy and a sell-side policy. The buy-side policy is a policy that is written on a first-party form. What that means is that the insured, the buyer, can make a claim directly against the policy for a breach of the seller's representations and warranties. This expedites the process of financial indemnification for a covered breach. Often, the insurer may seek subrogation against the seller of the target after a claim has been paid. On the sell side, the policy is written as third-party coverage. Advancement of defense costs may be provided, and there usually is an exclusion for fraud. In any event, if you'd like to know more about mergers and acquisitions or reps and warranties insurance coverage, give us a call at 703-218-2100, and one of our many corporate lawyers who work in the M&A area will be happy to answer your questions. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in just a few moments.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
Many employers use independent contractors to carry out key aspects of their businesses. Many independent contractors enjoy the freedom of self-employment as they perform freelance work for various companies. But who is an independent contractor, and what implications does that have? The term independent contractor has its primary implications in the tax area. An IC, independent contractor, works for a business and performs distinct tasks for the employer. The IC could be a writer in a marketing company who writes for certain projects as the needs arise. Independent contractors generally are not guaranteed work, but may be tapped for projects on an as-needed basis. The IRS's rule for determining who is an independent contractor is that the employer has control over the end result, but the IC has control over how the work will be completed. In all cases, the IRS has the final say on who is an independent contractor. Call us at 703-218-2100 for more information on who is an independent contractor.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Mark Wishkoff, who's Managing Director and Wealth Advisor and Relationship Manager at Chevy Chase Trust. Welcome, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Wayne. Thanks for having me. Been looking forward to this very much.
Good. I'm looking forward to having you tell us all about Chevy Chase Trust and your practice there. Mark is a senior wealth management advisor to high net worth individuals and families. He's a trusted source of advice and coordinator on all financial matters for those that desire a turnkey family office relationship. And that's something we're going to talk a little bit about today. It makes Chevy Chase a little bit unique in this marketplace. He has oversight responsibility on matters such as banking, brokerage, insurance, tax, and other areas of financial concern for most families. And he identifies opportunities for Chevy Chase Trust to engage with prospective clients and coordinates the firm's delivery of advice and services. He was originally from Wilmington, Delaware, is a graduate of the University of Delaware with a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration and a concentration in finance. And Mark is on the board of Friends of Theater at Mason and held previous board positions with Theater of the First Amendment in Fairfax, Virginia, and CASA in Montgomery County. Do you do theater?
I do not. That would be of interest. You'd probably get a kick out of that. But I prefer to be a little bit on the behind the scenes, helping to raise awareness of theater at Mason, helping to bring people in and watch the great performers with me on the sidelines.
Well, tell us a little bit about Chevy Chase Trust and your involvement with them.
Well, I've been with the firm now for 3 years. It's been a great environment. We, Wayne, are what I'd call a mid-size boutique. We are first investment managers. We're privately owned by the B.F. Saul family.
Sure.
Frank Saul is probably somebody that you're familiar with. Many of your listeners are familiar with. He's our owner. He is chairman of the firm. And very much involved with setting the mandate for our organization, which is to be the premier wealth manager, particularly in the Mid-Atlantic states, but certainly look to be the preeminent Washington D.C. based, fully based investment manager, financial planner, trust firm, and family office provider.
Hmm.
So the firm, Wayne, if I may, was founded
Please.
In 1999. We're a combination of companies in very many respects. So Mr. Saul pulled the investment and trust piece out of Chevy Chase Bank at a certain point in time around that period and combined us over the years with several very highly regarded registered investment advisors.
Okay.
So today we're about 70 people. We manage $3 billion on behalf of individuals. We have $15 billion in total assets. We're based in Bethesda, but we have clients all over the country.
When you say you've got $3 billion of individual assets, but $15 billion in total, what is the delta? What is the $12 billion of additional assets?
Very, very smart of you to pick up on that. Wayne, we have a fairly sizable custodial business where we serve as a safekeeper of assets for other firms, for other investment managers, for pension plans. The firm also has a sister organization by the name of ASB Capital Management, which is an institutional asset manager. We share some resources with them, but their management is quite different than what you'd find on the individual side, the private client side of the business,
right,
where I spend most of my
time.
Yep.
What are the areas of concentration that you all really focus on at Chevy Chase?
Well, there really are four things. If you want to understand the firm, the way to do it is to look at these four aspects of the business. The heart and soul of our business is as an investment manager.
Okay.
So when we talk about $3 billion, that's really what we're referring to. Investment management is really the lifeblood of our business. It really dominates the conversation in our firm. It is the common theme amongst all of our clients. Some clients come to us for varying needs, but all of our clients have us serving in an investment capacity.
Okay.
So the heart of the business is investment management. The second is financial planning. We are a big advocate for all, if not most, of our client base having a very thorough, deep dive into their big picture finances. That can be for some people, that can be building a balance sheet, looking at their cash flow, analyzing their needs in the way of insurance. We're not a seller of insurance. We
Right.
don't do anything in that type of area of finance.
But you can team with other insurance brokers to find them what they need in that regard.
Very much so. We want to understand what their overall financial positioning is so that we can identify problems, provide the best advice, and then help them as an advocate on their behalf find good people that we can team with to solve those problems. Those might be people in the insurance industry. Those might be bankers. They may be brokers. But most often what that is identifying, and particularly in the estate planning side of the world, where we can team with their existing attorney or someone that we know in the community, somebody highly qualified that can help further their estate plan and perhaps save them some tax money. But ultimately, we, Wayne, want to use a financial plan to better inform our investment managers so that we don't end up managing money in a vacuum. That is the one thing that most managers fail to do, is to have context with which to manage the portfolio. We believe very strongly that in financial planning you can do that. And very, very quickly, I'll mention fiduciary services. Obviously, by name, we are a trust company. About 20% of our client base has us serving in a fiduciary capacity of some sort. And then lastly, family wealth. You mentioned in your introduction of me, your kind introduction, that we're a family office provider, and family wealth services really encompasses these three previous areas that we've talked about: investments, planning, and trust services for the most complex families, multi-generational families, those that have oftentimes multiple managers, multiple advisors, and need someone, whether it be administrative or otherwise, to help coordinate this full team for those complex relationships.
It sounds like one would have to be extremely wealthy to get any attention at Chevy Chase Trust. Is that true or not true?
No, I wouldn't quite put it that way. What I'd say, Wayne, is we provide investment management services to those that have liquid portfolios of $2 million or more.
Got it.
Families that have multiple residences, multiple portfolios, complex estate planning needs, complex financial needs. They tend to have larger portfolios. We tend to surround them with a team of advisors. They tend to have their own team of advisors as well. And in a family office type setting, we're there to make that machine run smoothly. And that's a lot of what we do.
For the family office type practice, what size clients typically fall within that category?
Well, there's a range, Wayne, and I tend not to put it in terms of a number. What I prefer to do is really look at the type of situation. Not everybody needs quite as complex of a team structure to support them, and that can't necessarily be determined based on value.
Right.
For instance, we have plenty of clients that are very, very illiquid today.
Right.
Most investment managers would say, call me when you have more money. All right? And from my standpoint, that's really just a backwards way to look at it.
It's very nearsighted.
Yeah, it's very nearsighted, and we very much take a long-term perspective at Chevy Chase Trust. So what, you know, the way we look at it is this is where planning very much comes in. Let's look at the whole balance sheet. We may have a small business owner that's eventually going to be a large business owner, somebody that needs to get in front of estate planning needs, needs to be doing planning, needs assistance maybe with the debt side of their balance sheet.
Right.
There may not be a lot to manage today. And if we put a hard number on that, that really would eliminate, I think, a large group of people that very much need what we do, and they're going to invest in us. We're going to invest in them, and it's going to make a long-term relationship.
Now, you mentioned debt needs, getting the right side of the balance sheet in order, et cetera. Chevy Chase Trust used to be part of the Chevy Chase Bank, which was spun off and sold to Capital One. Now, Chevy Chase Trust is on its own. What banking relationships do you offer through Chevy Chase Trust, if any? Or how do you deal with that type of planning and giving, making available borrowing, lending, et cetera?
That's a great, great question, Wayne. One of the first things I'm typically asked by particularly anybody in our community here, because Chevy Chase Bank was so well known because it was the hometown bank for 40 plus years, just by name, we're typically confused in some fashion.
I had my first savings account at Chevy Chase Bank.
Right. And many people say that. Many people talk about their local branch or their first checking account or where they went for their last mortgage. Today, we're no longer associated with the bank. Of course, the names changed to Capital One Bank just about a year or two ago, even though the transaction happened back in 2009.
Right.
So today, we're a standalone business, as you're saying. We don't have an affiliation with a bank. We prefer it that way. Just like we don't have an affiliation with a law firm, but we know some really good attorneys at Odin Feldman and Pittleman, just as if we know some good CPAs out there, we know good bankers, brokers, insurance providers, all the things that financially our clients need. We want them to be thinking of us as an advocate on their behalf,
right,
that we're going to do these things. So when it, to answer your specific question, when somebody comes to us or we come to them and say, you need to consider this option in banking or in one of these other disciplines, our role then, and this is one of the things I in particular do on behalf of my clients, all of my clients, not just our family office clients. I want to make that point clear. We want to be the advisor on all things financial for all of our clients. What we will do is we'll go out and we'll talk to bankers. We'll talk to other providers. We'll say, give us your best shot. Give us your best quote. We'll advise our client on what we think they ought to be looking at, and then help them to coordinate and bring that to some closure. So we're here to really work on their behalf and find them some good opportunities.
What's the investment approach that Chevy Chase employs for its investors, for its individuals?
Sure. We're Wayne, a bit of a different breed, if you will. We don't believe in modern portfolio management as it's positioned today. We think it's quite flawed. Over the years, over really the last, in particular, last 25 years, probably going back to the mid-1980s, firms, many of the very large firms do this today, they use a manager-of-manager approach. They're looking for what's called best-of-breed management. There was a sizable article devoted this past week in Barron's to best-of-breed managers and how 80% of managers today use outside funds, both mutual funds and other things. We believe that's all wrong. It's for the convenience, Wayne, of the investment manager, not in the best interests of our clients. And so, what we offer today in our approach is we invest in concepts, not conventions. That's mm-hmm. the type of thing that we banter about at the office. And what I mean by that is we identify and much prefer to look at the world in a sense of what are the global macroeconomic themes we think will play out. This is not a complex model. It's not driven by algorithms. It's really, from our point of view, this desire to study the global economy, to identify long-term secular trends, to rigorously research investment ideas, make informed decisions, and create custom tailored portfolios, individual stocks, individual bonds, on behalf of our clients.
And with 30 seconds, what are the key themes that you're focusing on right now?
Yep. What we're really looking for here, Wayne, is long-term sustainable trends. We're looking for opportunities in energy, the change in demographics in the world, which we think are substantial, urbanization and the rise of city centers across the world and how that changes infrastructure and the demand for it, as well as what may unfortunately be the decline in the dollar's dominance. These are the types of things that we think are sustainable, secular moves in the global economy, and we're looking for ideas and investments within them.
I want to have you back to talk about some of these themes because I think there's a whole show in that. But we've run out of time today, Mark. Mark Wishkoff, if people want to get in touch with you at Chevy Chase Trust, how do they do that?
I'll give you both my phone number, which is 240-497-5023. My email, which is mwishkoff, M-W-I-S-H-K-O-F-F, at chevychasetrust.com. And the best place to get information about my firm and my great colleagues is at chevychasetrust.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. Join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 with your Blueprint for Wealth, right here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Hi, this is David Gregory. Join me Sundays at 8 p.m. for